Thank you, members. I know we'll have a few more coming in, but our time is limited. Today we have a hard stop, and this room's going to be used. We have session at noon, so we will not go after 12 o'clock. I will absolutely give equal time to proponents and opponents. And I've already talked to folks who seem to have been in charge of both sides, so that's good. I'll try to allow some time for committee discussion. And we'll just lead off right away then with Senator Peterson, Senate File 1199.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, members, for the opportunity to present Bill Senate File number 1199 relating to some minor changes to the prevailing wage law that we have here in Minnesota. I want to take just a couple, few minutes and talk a little bit about prevailing wage and kind of give a little bit of a short course right now. This is a wage that's used only on projects that have dollars from the state of Minnesota. Either it's completely a Minnesota project or a project that contains money from the state of Minnesota. And what this bill does is change a little bit how that prevailing wage is figured, and then modifies the work week a little bit that we'll be talking about here. As we go through this discussion, obviously there is, you can sense that there will be some issues that are in dispute. What I believe is that this allows, these changes would allow our construction dollar to go a little farther. It would put more people onto work sites and still provide a little more value to what our residents of Minnesota would get from those construction dollars. I have a personal example relating to this specifically. Just in the last year leading up to my service here in the Senate, I served on a city council in St. Cloud as well as on an HRA board. Our particular HRA board is the largest tenant in the city of St. Cloud. Our HRA owns over 1,000 apartment buildings, and just last year we had a small painting contract that came back at about $100,000 interior painting contract, and the question was asked if it included the prevailing wage law, or had the prevailing wage quote included in that quote, and the answer was that it's not. And the very next month, that exact same painting contract came in at about 15% more. The exact quote came in at $115,000, where previously, 30 days earlier, it had come in at $100,000. So I saw just in this last year a real example of some of the value that can be provided to our residents, and that you'll be hearing some comments relating to those issues moving forward. Today I have some folks testifying in favor, and I'll move on to our testifiers at this point. So,
thank you, Senator Peterson. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Cecilia Rattel with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. We're here to testify in support of Senate File 1199. I think, first off, it's very important to note that this bill certainly does not eliminate prevailing wage. It just changes the calculation and the way that overtime is triggered. The first change is the overtime trigger, which right now in Minnesota, overtime is triggered at both 8 hours a day and 40 hours a week. The way that the bill is currently written, it would only trigger it at 40 hours a week. And from the Office of the Legislative Auditor's report, this would help to reflect the practices that are more common in the construction industry, especially in a climate like Minnesota. The second change, one that is probably more controversial, is changing the calculation. Currently, the mode is used, and I'll give a couple of examples of why the mode doesn't accurately reflect the wages being paid throughout the state. So for those of you that have had a few years off of elementary math, mode is the number that's repeated the most number of times, whereas the mean is the average, so all the numbers added together and divided by however many wages are reported. The auditor's report in one section found that there would have been 131 prevailing wage rates that were based on county's information for 2005. And of the 131 wages that were reported, none of them were repeated twice, so a mode was not set. And in this case, they had to, revert back to previous history However, if there had been, you know, multiple doubles, say, so that would have been the mode, whichever one would have been the highest would have been set at the prevailing wage for Minnesota. That's one issue with using the mode. The second, also an example provided by the legislative auditor's report, was in LeSueur County that were 8 wages were reported for pipe fitters and steam fitters. And of the 8 responses, the lowest wage was $10, and the highest wage was $43.31. The highest wage was the only one that had 2 responses, thus making it the prevailing wage at $43.31. Now, had the average calculation been used instead, which is what this bill would have done, the prevailing wage would have been $22.87, which is a difference of $20.44, thus making the point of what Senator Peterson had just stated, making the construction dollars go farther. So in closing, I would just urge you to support Senate File 1199, and Aaron from the Taxpayers Association will come up and talk some more about the technicalities.
Mr. Chairman?
Hang on a sec. Senator Cohen.
Well, I'm just wondering, I don't know how you want to proceed. I just want to get a little bit of information on how the regions are set in terms of prevailing wage. So I don't know who that would be directed to, this witness or?
Senator Peterson, so in the time that you have and proponents have to talk to this bill, can that be a piece? Can Senator Cohen's question be answered, whether it's now or in subsequent testimony?
Yeah.
Senator Peterson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Mr. Cohen, that really, there's no change to that in this bill at all. Okay. This change is just in how the wage is being calculated, and then in the work week, which, incidentally, the work week change that we're proposing in this bill already is in several union negotiating contracts and simply allows people to work 4-10s, that type of thing, rather than 5-8s. And so I think that's a reasonable change as well. But relating to your question, there's no change in that in this bill.
Okay.
And yeah. Senator Kulesh, hang on, because what I want to do is I want to get the testimony on the record, try to have half the time for proponents, half the time for opponents, and then to allow for conversation and questions from members.
Mr. Chair, I had a specific question on the example that was just given on LeSueur County, and just it's just a short.
Senator Kulesh.
I'm sorry, I was late, so I didn't catch your name, but my question is that you have these wide range of wages. Are you suggesting that the $10 employee was as qualified as the $43 employee, and that they had the same training and productivity on that? And that if we were to cut, so that's one question as to whether or not we're talking apples to apples. And number two is that if the mean went in this example, the $43 employee would take a 50% hit, and the $10 employee would take a 100% increase. Is that what we're saying here?
Ms. Rattel, I will let you respond to that, and then I want to get you guys back on your testimony, because my sense is we'll hear more from Senator Kulesh and that argument, which needs to be addressed on the kind of in the third portion of this hearing.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Kulesh. I think the legislative auditor's report made it very clear that these were the reports that were, or the wages that had been reported for the category that, you know, was being reported on, and that's what they used to set the prevailing wage. So, I mean, even with the way that the wages were set, the $10 employee, because of the prevailing wage, would have been making $43, so it would have been a 400% increase. So, I mean, I think that's the whole point, is that right now the way that the calculation is, you know, created, it doesn't accurately reflect all of the wages that are reported. And that's what this is trying to get at.
Senator Peterson, why don't you continue then with your presentation or witnesses that you're bringing forward.
Mr. Chairman, excuse me, members of the committee, my name is Aaron Twait. I am the research director of the Minnesota Taxpayers Association. I was also the principal investigator of a report on prevailing wage law that we did in 2005. We were commissioned by the Associated Builders and Contractors of Minnesota to conduct a study examining the wage costs of public construction contracts using the Minnesota determination of prevailing wage and comparing it to the cost of those projects under an alternative definition of prevailing wage. Many states, including Minnesota and the federal government, conduct a study to determine what prevailing wage rates should be on public construction projects. Most of those states and the federal government determine prevailing wage as follows. If more than half the responses for a given labor class had the same wage down to the penny, then that wage is prevailing. And otherwise, this is a modal calculation that has been referred to as used. If that's not the case, then in most cases, some sort of average is used. That does vary from state to state and from the federal government. Minnesota differs from those states because we use the modal calculation regardless of the proportion of total responses that the mode represents. Our study looked at prevailing wages in effect in Minnesota in 2004, as calculated by the Department of Labor and Industry, compared them to median wages for various labor classes in Minnesota, as calculated by DEED and the Department of Labor through the Occupational Employment Statistics Survey. Just a few points about that Occupational Employment Survey. The sample is about 6,000 Minnesota employers. It samples various industries from 2006 to 2009. The response rate to that survey was about 79%, which is relatively high and much higher than the rates we've heard quoted for the prevailing wage survey. They also do a number of follow-up with non-responders in terms of follow-up mailings and phone calls. We used median data rather than mean data simply because that was what was available through the OES on a regional basis, and we augmented the median wages by 22% to account for the cost of benefit packages. This cost is built into the prevailing wage calculations but not into the OES survey. We did that based on information about benefit packages in the construction industry. Our findings were that converting from a DOLE calculated mode to a DEED calculated median resulted in lower total project costs of about 7.5% to 10%. We didn't have access to the data sets from either DOLE or DEED, so we can only speculate as to why there is this difference. But we think there are two issues involved. One is that participation in the DOLE survey is completely voluntary. And as I mentioned before, we understand that response rates are low. There's little or no work done to follow up with non-responders or to incorporate other statistical methodologies such as sampling, as is done with the DEED OES survey, which is really the gold standard for survey, for wage surveys. Also, because the modal method is used to set the prevailing wage regardless of the proportion of responses that that particular wage represents, you have a relatively small number of responses that can dictate what the prevailing wage will be. So the question is whether or not you want the prevailing wage to reflect what is paid most often, regardless of how often that particular wage is reported, or whether you want it to reflect more of an overall average. That completes my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Twait. Senator Peterson.
Mr. Chair, we have a few more folks that want to testify in favor. You probably have a more current list than I do. I understand there were still some calls coming in this morning. So obviously, I understand our presentation needs to be done in 30 minutes here, so we'll keep moving there.
So, Senator Peterson, then let me ask. I have Ray Cox and Bill Frank on this list. Mr. Cox. Is Mr. Frank here? Okay. Maybe, Mr. Frank, you could come to the table. There's going to be a little musical chairs going on here, but Ms. Rattel will stay in the warm-up box there. Mr. Cox, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, Senators, thank you. I'm pleased to be before you today to support Senate File 1199. I think there's been a good overview that's been presented right now. I'm speaking as an employer. I've run a construction company for 39 years. And from time to time do get involved with prevailing wage laws that are applied on different projects, public projects that we work on. Some people will argue that we should throw out prevailing wages entirely and let the market work, and I guess I'm not going to go into that today, although I do know that they're having the prevailing wages applied to projects tends to drive up the costs a little bit, and I know that we're all struggling with budgets and so forth here in Minnesota and across the nation. So I will say I kind of question whether we should be driving things up at one time and at the same time fighting over budgets, but that's for another day to discuss that. I do support the change in the going from the modal calculation to the averager of cost of reported wages. And I think that it will help get accurate information for what the true labor rates paid for various craft trades are. Right now, we do a lot of importing from one county to either two counties over. Somebody asked about how many areas there are, and as far as I know, there's 87 counties. So we do that, but they don't all get reported, and so things are getting shifted around, and I think that creates a problem. I would hope that if this change moves forward, we would get some, with some good effort and outreach, get really good, accurate information from the employers that are out there about what they really are paying their employees. I think that the ability to evaluate that information is doing nothing but getting better and better with the more computers we use and everything. So I think it was a rather complex process in the past, but I think it can be streamlined, and we can use that. I also want to address the overtime after 8 hours. I've always thought that that's probably one of the most anti-family laws that we have in Minnesota, because it starts interfering with the ability for employers and employees to work together. And I've had this happen many times in my employees. Somebody wants to get time off to go to a kindergarten Christmas production or go to a parent-teacher conference or whatever it is that they want to do with their families, but they really don't want to short their work week. And I, in my own instance, have tried to accommodate that as much as I can, and I may have them come in and do some work in the shop for a couple hours early, but that puts them into a different category if they're working longer, getting things ready for a job in the shop, like I say, before the workday starts, but allowing them 2 days later to take time off. So I think the overtime after 40, it really makes a lot of sense, and it does also allow, when you're working on the sites and doing particular functions, whether it's laying concrete or trying to beat hot, cold, wet, or snowy weather, you can adjust your workforce and do some longer times and then credit it off. So it does work. So I would hope that you would support both these changes. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cox. Mr. Frank, if you could introduce yourself for the record. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Bill Frank, and I'm the general manager for Steve Yagi's Specialized Truck Service, located in Rochester, Minnesota. Yagi is a member of the Minnesota Trucking Association, and we thank you for the opportunity to testify on SF 1199. By way of background, our company has been in business since 1994, and our fleet has grown from one truck, one driver, to 35 trucks during this period of time. We specialize in particular areas of the trucking industry, one of which is road construction. I'm here today in support of this bill. Yagi and its drivers help to build roads, so we deal with Minnesota's prevailing wage laws on a regular basis. We believe that the language before you represents a positive change to the current system. In our opinion, moving from the mode to the mean, the average of all reported rates, would give an employer like us the ability to put more people onto state road projects and, as a result, help the state to the ability to increase the size and scope of those projects. As we all know, our state's infrastructure is in dire need of maintenance and repair. However, evidence shows that the estimated need far outpaces the ability to actually fund all of those projects. Putting this situation into the context of prevailing wage, we often ask ourselves, with a more realistic wage rate, how many more miles of road could Yagi help build? And while we don't know the exact answer to that question, I believe there's an argument to be made that with this proposal, state government would get more bang for the buck. So might add that Yagi Trucking pays thousands of dollars on an annual basis in fuel tax and road tax to the state of Minnesota, which goes directly to the Highway Trust Fund, which is used to help build roads. Roads are our lifeblood. Without them, we don't exist. So we want to be sure that the money that's used for building roads is used efficiently. Let me give you a real-life example. During the construction season last year that stretched from approximately May 1st through the end of October, we had one specialized piece of equipment that was dedicated to a local contractor and driven by the same driver. As a result, we have detailed statistics for that truck. During the 7 months our truck was operated, we accumulated approximately 725 hours of prevailing wage work. While working on a prevailing wage job, we were required to pay the driver more than 1.5 times the amount of our regular wage. This is a little over 150% more than the non-prevailing wage rate. This begs the question, why would Yagi want to work its trucks on prevailing wage jobs in the future? We use the same truck and the same driver on the prevailing wage jobs as the non-prevailing wage jobs for this contractor. So there's no loss in quality of labor or equipment. Yet, the state of Minnesota paid additional money to just one truck dedicated to just one contractor for one season. If it weren't for Yagi bearing some of that additional cost itself, the state would have paid the full amount. Don't you just wonder how much additional cost was borne by the state during the entire construction season last year? Members of the committee, as I said earlier, I don't know exactly how much it costs to pave a mile of roadway, but I do know, based on our example of just one truck, it is more than the state of Minnesota needs to pay or can afford to pay with our existing prevailing wage law. In conclusion, I would encourage you to support this bill. Changing the department's calculation method from mode to mean would not only result in a more realistic reflection of wage rates throughout the state, but also help Minnesota stretch its scarce financial resources further in an area where it's desperately needed. That will conclude my comments. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Frank. So I just have two more on this list then. I have a Mr. Valentine, Jay Valentine, could join us at the table, and Mr. Raines, Phil Raines. And let's take them in that order. So, Mr. Valentine, welcome to the committee. Please give your name for the record.
Jay Valentine from Faribault, Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. I'll try to wrap up a few things real quick due to time, but a lot of things that were said were, I echo that. The problem that we have with it is specifically, I'll drill down to a few things, is the survey census for a commercial project. It requires only 8 hours work to be considered for a project. This is a huge problem, as in our county, we have industrial sites that hire electricians to perform work on a maintenance contract on a time material basis. The electrician works there every day on a time material basis, reports every few days a week or as a different project, when in reality, this is not a specific project. Therefore, according to the rules, they can report each week or every few days as a different project. This distorts the mode method. For example, there may be a large commercial project going on next door that is employing several electricians, and that will take a year, but they can only report 8 hours, as it is only one project. So I will never be able to set the mode, as we have different wages for different workers, and it's virtually impossible to set a wage for a county based on the mode. The union scale is one rate for all electricians in that union. This makes it, for the majority of electricians, impossible to set the rate. As a merit shop contractor, I pay electricians based on their merit. So there is a variation in almost every electrical hour rate and benefit package. Therefore, the mode system would be impossible for me to ever set the rate. I could submit wage and benefit information on 100 electricians, and while the union only submits 10, they would set the rate as their packages are identical for each electrician. Yesterday, I was at the House meeting, and one of the legislators said that this is taking away wages, and that's not the case. These, you know, this does not change the collective bargaining agreements. Some of these high-quality union workers are worth every dime. I've got friends that are in the union. My dad was in the union, and they do a fantastic job. They got a great apprenticeship program. Have nothing against them. They work faster than a lower quality wage worker, and because of their efficiency, they will win bids regardless. This is true on private projects as well as public. Wage is not equal or guaranteed performance or quality. Quality is obtained through drawing specifications, licensing, not wages. One other thing, the gentleman before with the Minnesota Taxpayers Association, he mentioned a 7% to 10%. We recently did bid two prevailing wage jobs at the correctional facility, and we were awarded both jobs. And had we been able to submit our bid with our regular rates, we would have saved 10% on one job and 12% on another. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Raines.
Good morning, Senators, Chairman. Phil Raines from Associated Builders and Contractors. Should have a handout in your packet that I submitted early with some PowerPoint slides there. I'm going to skip most of it. If you could just go to the third slide here real quick. This shows some actual rates that were set and how they were set. On that, like I said, third page, it says Wabasha County Carpenters, 2009. In this situation, you had seven rates submitted. Out of that, none of them are duplicates, so there's only a mode of one. The department rules said that 3931, the highest rate, is the one that's going to be used. That's the department rules that say if there is no mode or there's a tie of the mode, you go with the highest rate. So that was certified at 3931. If you were to use a mean of that, it would be $25.63 an hour. And then we compare that against the deed statistics. Deed is the gold standard of labor rates around the country. It's what's used by Bureau of Labor Statistics. It's actually funded from the federal government and done through deed. We know these rates are accurate because they have 75 or 79% response rate. They don't publish them unless they have 75% response rate. We know they're accurate. That comes in at $21.41 an hour. If you add on the 22% average fringe that goes along with it, it'd be right in that $25 an hour range. Would be accurate. If you look at this next example that's in there, we've got some multiples in that at $23.30 an hour, 1976, but there's three at $46.29. That's what set it. It's actually the highest rate certified for carpenters in the state was set in Kanabec County. And I can pretty much guarantee you Kanabec County doesn't have the highest paid carpenters. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's just a function of the economics of the state. If you were to take an average of that, it would have come in at $28.24. You compare it against the deed statistics, putting it at $20.25 an hour. Add on the fringe, that would be a little higher than what the average actually is, but it'd be a whole lot closer than $46.29. And if you look at the third slide, we have. I want to stress this is about setting accurate rates. This isn't bringing rates down or that type of thing. This is about setting accurate rates so it actually reflects the area. If you look at the third example I have in here, Nobles County Common Labor. Again, this is the actual data that set the rates. $9.50 an hour, there were three reports of that. That was the most frequently occurring number. $9.50 is a very low rate. If you'd taken the average of it, it would have been $15.43 an hour. Compared against the OAS data, much more accurate. So in this situation, you see the mode actually lowering the rate below what local people are actually paid. We'd like to see accurate data being used to set these rates. If you have accurate data, it's not going to be as big a problem. It's not going to be a burden to the state that it is. This will save, on average, about 7.5% to 10%. And as you guys know, that's probably going to mean more bonding projects because we set the total bonding bill number and then we fill it with projects. We've had some people look at this, said this is going to mean about 1,000 more people get employed in the construction trades. We've lost about 55,000 over the last 4 years here in Minnesota. We'd love to get anybody we can off the bench right now. People don't lose their job when they get in the normal rate that they get paid. This won't, for anyone under a collective bargaining agreement, this will not lower their rate one penny. That rate is set by their collective bargaining agreement. What this says is the floor that the state requires will not be out of line. It will go to the average of the numbers that are out there.
Thank you, Mr. Raines. So maybe at this point, Senator Pearson, if you have a concluding minute or two, and then we'll shift gears and bring on the folks who want to testify against this measure. Senator Peterson?
Nope, I'm happy to move forward. So.
Okay, well then let me ask, and I appreciate Mr. Melander, I don't mean to put you on the hot seat, but you're the first on my list, so I ask you to come join us at the table.
Mr. Chair?
Hang on, Senator Kelash. I'm going to bring these people back, but Senator, if Mr. Melander would join us, and then I also have Dr. Jordan. So maybe you two could start. And again, what I'm trying to do is make sure that we have a full record, both sides, and if I can get it down to the minute that each side is presenting the exact same amount, that'd be great. I also want to allow some time for committee discussion and committee questions. So, Mr. Melander, I hope you'll help me on
you bet.
On timing. I appreciate you helping the chair in that regard. And so maybe I'll ask you to start since you're first on the list here.
And, Chair, maybe you can help me and committee members before we move on just to let us know how much time will be allotted.
At least till 11:40, so that's 35 okay. minutes.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, thank you. If this was a ball game and you were the umpire and I was the manager, this is our lineup, sir. It'll be myself. It'll be an economist. We'll have a couple of Minnesotans that are emerging communities that we say within the industry that will shore up our industry in the future. We'll have an association member and then a contractor.
Well, you'll be Mr. Gardenhire then.
And Mr. Chairman, then I will have a closing statement that will probably take about 15 to 20 seconds.
Thank you.
So thank you for the opportunity to come in front of you today. Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Harry Melander. I'm here on behalf of Minnesota construction workers to ask you to consider no changes to the bill that's in front of you or no changes to prevailing wage law. Today, as I said, we'll have a number of speakers that will support our position. We believe that any modification regarding a change to the 8-hour day and the wage and the way that wages are calculated will have a devastating effect on Minnesota workers. It will give Minnesota workers a pay cut. And testifiers that we've heard earlier were continuing talking about cutting workers' wages. I would pose a question later on to those testifiers, is what will be the reduction on when, if in fact, this bill does go through to their profit? What it will do is it will not provide any additional jobs that the legislature has promised us at the beginning of the session. It will cause us to work longer days for less, spending less time at home, and causing even more challenges to our family in these times when family stability is very important. Mr. Chairman, committee members, this bill will hurt Minnesotans. It will cause us to work longer periods of time for less, and I truly don't believe that's what any of you want for Minnesota workers. Today we've heard a number of comments about the cost of prevailing wages. I'm going to read two brief statements. And there are studies on both sides of this issue. We understand that. A study of school construction costs in Great Plains states that prevailing wage rates do not raise construction costs, but repealing such laws hurts taxpayers and workers. After Kansas prevailing wage laws were repealed, wages fell by 11%. Training programs declined by 39%.
Mr. Melander? I hate to interrupt, but because this is being testified, if you just move your microphone about 6 inches closer to you, I think we'll be able to pick up everything and those watching this on...
You don't want me to start over, do you?
I think you're doing great. I just want to make sure everybody hears you.
I understand. Thank you, sir.
Sure.
Employers' contributions to pension funds fell 17%, according to the study prepared by the Kansas Senate. Highway construction costs are actually higher where workers are paid less, according to analysis by the Federal Highway Administration, data by the Construction Labor Research Council. The study shows that labor costs to build a mile of highway in high-wage states with low-wage versus low-wage states averaging 40% less in wages was on average $123,000 per mile less in high-wage states due to workers' high productivity. Mr. Chairman, our next speaker will be Ms. Jordan, an economist who will comment and support the methods used in determining wage rates in Minnesota. Ms. Jordan has testified in the past on these issues and will provide comments that should be considered before you hurt your constituents and make Minnesota construction workers receive even smaller paychecks and skew the way that Minnesota prevailing wage laws are determined. After our partnership completes, partnerships, contractors, workers, and labor testifies, we'll give a closing statement with a brief statement that will even give more clarity to our position on this bill. Mr. Chairman, Ms. Jordan.
And
thank you.
Ms. Jordan, welcome to me. Let me just make sure that I have the same names as Mr. Melander, because I know he's trying to get his people in it. So I have a John Ness or Nessie, a Sherry Wilson, and a Stephen Carter. Those are the three more names that I have down.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, that's correct.
Okay, great. Ms. Jordan, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, can I have a page distribute this study? Or
it looks like you might need a few pages.
There are a few pages there. Good afternoon, Chair, and our guest, good morning, and senators. My name is Lisa Jordan. I have a PhD in economics from the University of Notre Dame. My area of expertise is labor markets and labor market restructuring. And with all due respect to Senator Peterson, these are not minor changes in these bills. These changes aren't minor for the men and women who are construction workers in the state, and they're not minor for the state of Minnesota. This isn't just about a reduction in wage rates. This could lead in more health and safety issues on the job sites, weakening apprenticeship programs, reduced revenues for the state, and a number of other negative consequences without really any upside for the state based on all the data. I had the opportunity a few years ago when the state auditor was conducting a review of prevailing wage to spend a very intimate summer with every single study that's ever been done on prevailing wage, both here in the United States and in Canada. And the report that I'm passing out right now summarizes all those studies, both in favor of prevailing wage and those opposed to prevailing wage. And you can see they're categorized by what kind of study they are. So I very quickly, we're going to have people later talking about sort of the personal impacts, but I just want to look at the data with you, because as an economist and somebody who actually believes in the numbers, I want to kind of review with you what the data says. First of all, on the question of the mode versus the mean. If you look at my study on page 70, we have a table that summarizes every single state in the nation and how they do prevailing wage. What you'll quickly see is that every state does something different. Why use the mode? The main advantage of the mode is that labor is heterogeneous. Not all workers are the same. So not every worker that reports to Deed is a journeyman carpenter. If you look at the Deed rates that have been suggested a couple times today, Deed includes both the journeyman carpenter and my brother who tried to do framing for a summer. You don't want my brother working for the state, let me tell you. So the numbers get biased. That's the problem. And that's why the mode, if you look at the economic research and you read statistical analysis, each of these measures, the mode, the median, and the mean, has advantages and disadvantages. The major advantage of the mode is it's a way of controlling for variations in labor across a category, like carpenters. So if you really wanted to nail this down, you could have more specifics about, you know, we want journeyman carpenters and how much do journeyman carpenters make. So that's why the mode is a more effective measure. The mode is also the measure used in many states. In 9 of the states of the 31 that have prevailing wage, they actually use the collectively bargained agreement because they assume that there's information on both sides for management and labor in that. So the mode and the process in Minnesota is both valid and reliable. When the Taxpayers Association did their research, they compared the mode in Minnesota to if we went to the prevailing wage rate as calculated in Davis-Bacon. And what they actually found in that is they were very small differences. And in fact, if you use the Davis-Bacon rate, there might be up to 1.5% drop in transportation construction, but actually up to a 2% increase in other building projects. So they don't mention that they looked at that, but we're very comparable with what's done nationally using the mode. When they use the Deed rates, they also overestimated the cost of labor and construction projects. And had they used a more realistic measure there, in order to get the 7% savings they just talked about, they would have had to cut workers' wages by 50%. So there's about 3 pages in my study that look at their analysis. And I talked to them a few years ago about their study as well. But very quickly, the most important thing here is the state auditor and all the research says that cutting workers' wages has no statistical impact on cost. So for the state, changing the method of prevailing wage calculation will not benefit you by cutting costs. And if you can't cut costs, then why impact workers? What you will do is you will reduce state revenues because a construction worker has a multiplier of about 1.9%. So for every dollar a state worker gets, they're going to spend that in the community. If you look at the analysis of after prevailing wages weakened, wage rates for workers in the state decreased from anywhere from 4% to 18%. On the high end of that, that means a reduction of wages in Minnesota for Minnesota workers of about $900 million. That $900 million with the multiplier translates into $1.8 trillion for workers in Minnesota. If you look at revenues on that, you can refer to the back of my study. What you'll find is the state will lose approximately between $13 and $61.7 million in income taxes, $5.6 to $26 million in sales taxes.
Ms. Jordan?
Yes, sir.
I don't have a back to your study.
This is my study.
Am I looking at the wrong? Okay, the big one. Okay.
Yeah.
That one.
Yeah, I couldn't have summarized 20 years of research in 2 pages.
I saw you lift up the color one, and I thought, well, I don't want my members to be looking at a blank page, so excuse the interruption.
Oh, that's okay. So while we know that this is going to reduce workers' wages, this isn't a minor change. This is a change that's going to impact revenues for the state. It's going to impact our apprenticeship programs. It's going to impact health and safety on the job. All the data says that when prevailing wages weaken, probably because you have less trained workers on the job. So this isn't a minor change. And to say it is really putting a sheep in wolf's clothing, I believe. I think there's no upside for the state of cutting prevailing wage, and I think it will significantly hurt both construction workers in this state and the people who rely on construction worker salaries. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Jordan. So, Mr. Melander, should I ask that Mr. Ness or Nessie?
Mr. Chairman, I think what we'd like, if all possible, we'd like to have the two Minnesota workers to come up here and just testify very. They have a brief statement that they'd like to
read
to the committee.
So is that Sherry Wilson and Stephen Carter?
Mr. Chairman, committee, that's correct.
Okay. Please, if you two could join us and do a little musical chairs there. Good morning. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record. Whoever wants to flip a coin and go first. Sir.
I'd like to go first, Mr. Chair.
Great.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Steve Carter, and I'm a heavy equipment operator, and I work for Ames Construction. I'm an apprentice, and I just got into this industry last year, and I was lucky enough to get a few projects and get some work hours logged. I'm currently laid off, but I just found out I was called back for work next week. I worked extremely hard to get into this profession last year. I participated in a program that consisted of 20 weeks of intensive hands-on training that got me ready for my apprenticeship. I spent weeks away from home, away from my family, with goals of becoming a skilled operating engineer. I'm accomplished the first part of my goal. I got a job with Ames and am now a proud member of the Local 49 Apprenticeship Program. But I still have more to do. If I wanted to fill my dream of having a career that gives me the opportunity to provide for my family, I need to make it through my apprenticeship program to get journey status. I'm very concerned about Senate File 1199 and how it might get in the way of my goal. This bill will lower the prevailing wage rate over time, which means lower construction wages for me and for every other construction worker in Minnesota. Lowering the prevailing wage rate will also make it harder for good contractors like the ones I work for to compete for jobs against out-of-state contractors that are willing to pay their workers a lot less. If out-of-state contractors come in here and lowball the bids, they will bring with them out-of-state construction workers that will take my job. I have worked too hard to get here and extremely disappointed that all we're talking in this bill instead of focusing on good paying construction jobs for hardworking Minnesotans like myself and others in this room. Please vote no to Senate File 1199. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Carter, and good news on getting called back next week. Ms. Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senators, good morning. My name is Shari Wilson, and I'm a truck driver for Schaefer Contracting. And, you know, just 3 years ago, if you had told me that I'd be sitting here today as a member of the Teamsters Local 120, I would have never believed it. In fact, I would have said they were crazy. Prior to my job with Schaefer, I spent 25 years of my life on the management side of the security industry. That ended when the recession of 2008 hit. I was laid off of the job that I held overseeing control centers for two high-rise buildings in downtown Minneapolis. As the breadwinner for my family and the mother of a child with extensive medical needs, I was scared. I didn't know what I was going to do. I needed to do something, and I needed to do something fast. Fortunately, I was able to get free training and job placement through the Minnesota Teamsters Apprenticeship Program. I had never envisioned myself behind the wheel of a multi-ton vehicle. I stepped way outside my comfort zone, and today I have a good job. I did what I had to do, pay the mortgage, put food on the table, and provide health care for my son. While my friends and my neighbors were having homes foreclosed and being forced onto government programs, I was able to make ends meet. I'm living on way less than I used to. There is no money for luxuries, but we're getting by. I'm here today to urge you to strongly consider how changes to the prevailing wage law may negatively impact families like mine. With gas prices getting higher, food prices going up, every cent literally counts. And I'm not exaggerating. For me, every cent really does matter. What may look like minor changes to the prevailing wage law may have a big impact. So please give serious consideration to people like me and my son. Please protect the middle class and keep the prevailing wage law as is. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wilson and Mr. Carter. So, Mr. Melander, I had at least one other name down.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, we actually have two.
Okay. If we could have those folks join us at the table then. And is it Ness or Nessie?
Nessie, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. So, Mr. Nessie, welcome to the committee. Why don't you go first?
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is John Nessie, and I represent a number of construction employer associations, over 120 employers in the associations that employ thousands of Minnesota construction workers. I wanted to begin my brief testimony by reflecting on the public interest statement that's at the beginning of the Minnesota Prevailing Wage Statutes. It talks about the fact that it's in the best public interest to use the highest quality of labor reasonably available to build our public buildings. And the mode is the statistical measure that best finds the wage rates paid to that quality of labor. It's not an average. It's not an outlier. They're real rates paid to real Minnesota workers working for real Minnesota employers. And it's not just on public projects, but it's on a lot of private projects. You've heard some conflicting information from academics today, and that's probably not surprising to anybody in the room. But what I'd encourage you to do is go out and talk to the private project owners and ask them why they're hiring contractors that pay the prevailing wage rates. They probably don't even know that that's the case. But they're choosing those contractors because they've got a workforce that produces the highest quality product on time, on budget, and they do it, they produce a product that has a lower long-term cost associated with it. If Minnesota changes from the mode to the mean, our costs won't change, but our products will. At least our short-term costs. Our long-term costs probably will, because we'll have more replacement and more repair costs associated with the products. I'm sorry, with the buildings. So I want to tell you that the use of the mode isn't just good public policy, it's good fiscal policy, and I'd urge you to reject this bill. Thank you.
Mr. Nessie, you have the same look and name as one of my favorite Senate employees.
That's a fact.
Be nice to him over the next couple of weeks. He's going to be working pretty hard.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you for coming to the committee.
Yes, ma'am. Welcome to the committee. If you could give your name for the record.
My name is Laura Carroll. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee.
Ms. Carroll.
I am with Gunner Electric. We are a union contractor out of Eden Prairie. I am a master electrician for the company, and I am also a member of the State Board of Electricity, though I'm not here as a representative of the State Board. I am as a representative of contractors and the National Electrical Contractors Association. There's many reasons for supporting prevailing wage and not supporting this bill. The prevailing wage laws are rooted in a philosophy of economic growth, and they were enacted to allow good contractors to pay fair wages and hire qualified workers. Our workers are highly skilled, highly trained through our JATC, Joint Apprentice Training Committees. This is a training that we as union contractors and as the union offers to all employees. Prevailing wage promotes the use of a local labor force. It allows small contractors like myself, we're a small woman-owned company, to be able to compete on government contracts. It keeps labor costs low by employing skilled labor to avoid cost overruns and safety problems. It improves the working conditions for all workers. It encourages contractors to compete for government work based on skill, safety, and efficiency rather than by cutting wages to our employees. It also promotes a strong local economy for allowing contractors with local workers to compete with out-of-region firms that could bring in unskilled, lower-cost employees. By reducing the prevailing wage, it will cause a race to the bottom for wages. It will result in the loss of professional construction workers in our industry, which will ultimately remove the competitive efficiencies we now enjoy. It will end construction as a lifelong passion for many workers, and it will help eliminate the working middle class that sustains our state. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and the committee.
Thank you, Ms. Carroll. Mr. Melander had strategically reserved some of his for kind of a final closing here. I'm sure it won't be the last word, Mr. Melander, but thanks for watching the time. I appreciate it, and for bringing some good testimony before the committee today.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, I'll be brief, and we really do appreciate the opportunity that the House provided us last evening and your committee today. This is a big, important issue for Minnesota workers. My statements will be brief, but I just want to make a couple of comments here, is that our organization, the people that all of these men and women work for, we have a partnership here. We want our employers to make money. We want them to be successful. It's important. If they succeed, we succeed. And I think we've been doing a very good job with that by the work that we've done in Minnesota. Not one, sir, not one of the testifiers talked about the impact that this bill would have on them, because I truly believe that it won't. This isn't going to be a financial burden for them. It will only be placed on the workers here in the room. I don't think that's what you want. I don't think that's what Minnesota wants. Mr. Chairman, as I had said earlier, this does nothing but cut workers' wages in Minnesota. We strongly, strongly ask that you reject changing any modification in the prevailing wage law and the way that it's determined and the method that's determined in the state of Minnesota. Thank you, and we will stand for questions if, in fact, there are some.
Yeah, and Mr. Miller.
Thank you, Senator.
And Mr. Miller, I'm sure there will be some questions, and so I would say for everyone who was able to testify, I hope you're kind of prepared. Some of the committee members might call you up for some further clarification. And Mr. Miller, if I can just ask kind of one big picture question. Are there any changes, modifications, or updates to the prevailing wage law that you'd suggest we should consider going forward? Or is this just, we've got status quo is fine and it's It's a scheme that works for the 21st century economy. Is there? I know there's been a lot of discussion, a lot of developments over the years, and I just wanted to get kind of your general take on where it sits today. I understand you oppose this bill. And that's
sure. Mr. Chairman, committee members, as I stated earlier, and as our testifiers provided in the brief two comments that I made, prevailing wage works in Minnesota. We believe that it accurately reflects what happens in the workplace, and we believe the methodology used to determine that wage rate actually what happens or reflects what happens within the counties of Minnesota. Also, so that Mr. Chairman, the committee should know that the wage rate that the groups that we work for does not prevail throughout the counties, throughout all of the counties of Minnesota. In fact, I believe that we set probably half of them, and that the rest of them are reflected by those wage rates that accurately reflect the work that's being done in those counties. But we're always, Mr. Chairman, willing to talk to folks.
Thank you. So, committee members, I'd also like to ask Mr. Rutchkowski from the Department of Labor and Industry to join us at the table briefly. I know there's been some work on the fiscal note, so I want to make sure that that information and background is on the table for our discussion going forward. Everyone should have a copy of the fiscal note in their materials. So, Mr. Rutchkowski, can you give us a little background on this fiscal note and the department's work?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm John Rakuski with the Department of Labor and Industry. And Mr. Chairman, I just got this fiscal note along with all of you this morning. I guess what I should inform you that any change in the calculation will trigger rulemaking, whether it's the mean or the median. And another thing I'd like to point out is since this bill does not have an effective date, then it would default to August 1st. If you go to the second to last paragraph, the annual surveys are being done as we speak, and they will be completed approximately by June 3rd. If this bill becomes law August 1st, we would begin rulemaking, and we'd have to do a new survey, essentially throw out this one because the law has changed. It's important to note to the members, it's called the Department of Labor and Industry for a reason. It's one of the oldest agencies in the state of Minnesota. And really our mission isn't to advocate on a policy level. We're a regulatory agency, and we're here to administer the laws that you all pass in the legislative branch. And lastly, Mr. Chairman and members, this $100,000 expenditure, of course, isn't something that was in our biennial budget presentation earlier this year.
And I thank you, Mr. Rakowski. I did not mean to surprise you with this, and I assumed your department or at least staff there were involved in the putting this together. So,
absolutely.
Does the department have a position on Senate File 1199?
The department is neutral on this bill, sir.
Okay. And Senator Peterson, did you have a comment on the fiscal note?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The only comment I'd have, I would also concur. We just got this morning. The comments I would make is that, you know, you can clearly see on that fiscal note that there is no savings that are booked from the potential rate change. And then the other thing, we did meet with Commissioner Ken Peterson in regard to this issue, and I can let Mr. Rajowski, you know, comment in regards to, you know, where the agency is on this issue. But one of the solutions we talked about in terms of saving some money is doing the survey every 2 years rather than 1 year, and they seem to be open to that and would have a significant cost savings that would potentially offset any potential costs related to any changes.
Mr. Rakowski. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this came up earlier in the session when Senator Gimsey of the Transportation Committee asked our people to come and testify on prevailing wage. And since Senator Gimsey is one of the respondents every year as a contractor in his private life, he suggested if we'd be open to a biannual wage survey. And when I mentioned that to the Labor Standards Director, a big smile went on her face. So I would appreciate your consideration.
Well, thank you, Mr. Rakowski, and Senator thank Peterson. You. I know you've both been working hard on this. Senator Miller, to the fiscal note issue.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And just wondering, do you have an idea what those savings could potentially be? Because those obviously aren't in here. So has there been any conversation?
Mr. Rakowski.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Miller, no. Okay. It would be impossible to calculate until it happened.
Senator Peterson.
Yeah, from what I recall from the conversation, and Mr. Rogelski can correct me if I'm wrong, there's two full-time staff that work on these surveys essentially year-round. So, yep. You know, it would be one person wages and benefits, which on the fiscal notes I've seen is easily over $100,000.
Senator Miller.
I have a follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just a comment more than anything. I appreciate the testimony on both sides of this issue, and it's obviously a very controversial issue, but I'm a little surprised to see a fiscal note of $100,000 for changing it. Just a comment, not a question for anyone in particular, but this was the first time I've seen it. I'm a little surprised.
Senator Miller, we've had a lot of fiscal note discussions. This session. Ms. Rattel, to this issue?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Miller. I think one thing that's important about this fiscal note is there was two different fiscal notes requested, one from Dolly to talk about their impact and one for the bill to see what the savings would be. And there was just a miscommunication about that not all being on the same one, and one got done and one didn't. So the savings and what, you know, MMB would book as savings has not been predicted. Additionally, the biennium cycle, because that's not even in the bill yet or hasn't really been presented, that can't be in the fiscal note yet. So that's another possible savings that we haven't seen or talked about.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Mr. Melander, did you want to talk to the fiscal note issue, or are you hovering?
Make sure that when John leaves, I get a seat.
Okay.
I'm accommodating, sir.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Rakowski. And so, members, my assumption is that we will, if we take action to move this bill, it would go to finance, because there still are these fiscal issues and some things to marry up there. So, you know, we can talk some more to the fiscal note issue, but
Mr. Chair, may I?
Mr. Melander,
may I have the opportunity? Sure. And I thank you for allowing me. And through the chair to our friend at the chamber here, which we are a member, just some clarity in regards to the fiscal note. Are you talking about the savings in regards to additional surveying, or is the question the fiscal note in regards to the savings to the state of Minnesota?
Okay, so
if in fact wage rates are changed.
Ms. Rattel, I think Mr. Melander is asking you questions, and I'll allow a little of that. I also want to get to committee members' questions, and maybe some of that will come out as well. But Ms. Rattel, to those issues.
Thank you, okay. Madam Chair and Mr. Melander. I think the fiscal note that has been requested regarding this bill just goes to the issues that are in this bill, one being the trigger of overtime and the second being the calculation change. Changing to the biennium survey, because it's not in this bill and really was just a discussion that it was had, that has not been requested for a fiscal note.
Okay.
I have Senator Kielash and DeKreif, and I know I have some others. So Senator Kielash.
Yes, Mr. Chair. And one of the things, the 7 to 10% savings hasn't been able to be duplicated by any of the studies. I believe Dr. Jordan's testimony reviewing all of that has said it's more like a 1 to 1.5% savings. And a lot of the other studies I've looked at also say that the reduced wages that the employees are going to make, the taxes that they would be spending with the higher wage rates would go directly to the state coffers in sales and income taxes. So the savings are really pretty minimal on this. One of my questions for the Taxpayers Association was, where do you get that 7 to 10% overall decrease? And isn't it cutting all the workers' wages on that?
Well, that's for Mr. Twait.
Twait.
I'm sorry, I didn't. Yeah, I don't have a list of the
Mr.
names.
Mr. Twait, there, so. to that question.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and Senator Kielash, again for the record, Aaron Twait. Excuse me, Minnesota Taxpayers Association. Yes, to the second part of your question, that reduction is in fact entirely in wages. How we calculate that was we determined, speaking with a number of construction professionals and architects, what the share of labor would be for the total percentage of a construction project. And we constructed sort of a high-end and a low-end range on that. We applied the differential between the DOLE prevailing wages and the deed median wage to those, to that share of the proportion of the cost that's attributable, in our eyes, to the labor.
Mr. Chair, to follow up.
Senator Kielash, to follow up.
There is a big assumption on that, and that is there is equal productivity among the wage rates, isn't there? On that study? If you have a more skilled worker making more money, being more productive, and a lower skilled worker, and you just say the difference is this amount, you're not actually talking about the work getting done. You're just talking about what the state's paying. And so what I don't quite understand is how, you know, you're talking apples to oranges and as far as skill levels go on this stuff. And for the record, Mr. Chair, I'm a 35-year member of the Carpenters Union, and I worked for approximately 13 years. I've had extensive experience dealing with prevailing wage laws, both on job sites and with the studies that have gone on. So I've known an awful lot about the studies, and there hasn't been a single study, both for or against it, that has been conclusive that says that cutting workers' wages and reducing the ability for contractors and unions to train their workers is a step in the right direction. So I wanted to make that clear before we got going. So
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kielash, we up front in our study state that there are a number of qualitative issues with regard to a lot of the things that you spoke about, and we made it very clear that that was outside of the scope of our investigation. Our investigation was very limited to substituting wage rates, and we understand that. And as part of our recommendations, we suggested that the state provide some sort of pilot project to determine whether or not the claims with regard to a lot of the qualitative issues, what the costs associated with that might be.
Mr. Chair, to follow up, because are you suggesting an amendment to this bill that says a pilot project?
Mr. Chairman, I am.
Because that's a huge difference between changing the whole state prevailing wage laws and having a pilot project to see if it works. So, I mean, a little inconsistent there.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, we were asked to testify on this bill. We don't have a position on the pilot project, I mean, apart from the recommendation in the report.
I have Senator DeCraif.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question would go to Ms. Jordan. Was this your handout, the colorful red, white, and blue handout?
No, sir, that wasn't.
Okay. Okay.
My handout was the 116-page study.
Okay. Do you know whose handout this was?
It's the Building Trades, Minnesota Building Trades Council.
That's Mr. Belanders.
Okay. if I could ask you a question, does this handout really have any relevance on this committee hearing at all? It looks to me like this is a difference between having prevailing wage or no prevailing wage, when it looks to me like what we're actually trying to do is in this bill is to determine a different way to figure prevailing wage. But this compares states that have no prevailing wage at all, which is not what we're trying to do.
Mr. Chairman, committee member, our point in passing the handout was to show to yourself and the other committee members, not only here but in the House, that prevailing wages is a good value, and it provides a couple of things that this handout does. It says that looking at those two states that we had an example without prevailing wages, that workers and contractors from outside of the state are going and taking their work, and also the value and the savings that we had on a couple of the bullet points based off of some estimates on MnDOT projects.
Okay. Senator DeCraif.
quick. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in essence, this has nothing, no bearing really on this hearing at all, because this bill doesn't talk about eliminating prevailing wage, which is basically the comparison that this makes.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, I truly believe that this accurately reflects what's happening in the state of Minnesota, and we believe that prevailing wages, how it's determined now, is a good value for the state of Minnesota. And I apologize if, in fact, you see that it provides no value. We believe that it does.
I have Senator Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a question for Dr. Jordan and probably several follow-ups for her. I had a chance
Senator
here,
Howe.
Mr. Chair, Dr. Jordan, I had a chance to breeze through your report here. We just got it today during this meeting. But in the abstract, under one, you write, the survey method that the Department of Labor and Industry currently uses to gather data for determining prevailing wage is both valid and reliable. And in the next sentence, you say the data is trustworthy. I'm going to ask you to defend that statement.
Okay.
Dr. Jordan.
All right. So statistically speaking, when you do a survey, what you want to be able to do is to know that you can replicate the survey and that there's a concrete way of doing it. In Minnesota, the way it currently happens is that in the year that I did the study, there were 16,000 surveys sent out. 24,000 surveys were returned. And that's because there, a multiplicity of people can fill out these surveys, and it's open to people doing it. And so, excuse me for a second. And so when you look at, if you look further down in the document, there's a whole chapter that I spend talking about the process by which this survey data is collected. And it's done by county for commercial projects, and then it's done by district for highway heavy. So there's two different ways of looking at that way. So as looking at the survey process, the questions are the questions clear and concise? Are all stakeholders allowed to send in information? And can the information be replicated? That's what we mean by reliability. And so clearly on all those measures, the way that the survey process is done in the state. Now, further in my study, I mentioned that I would encourage, and I'm not making an amendment to the bill, but I would encourage the state to consider measures, because I heard a number of comments earlier about concerns whether the data has enough data in it. Other states have gone to measures either by providing a small penalty if people don't send in survey data, and it's up to, survey responses up to 85%, or in Tennessee, they've come up with a very simple online process, and they doubled their response. They went from 10% response rate to 50% response rate. So as an economist, I always think higher response rates are good, but if you get to about 25-30% statistically, you have response rates that are valid and reliable.
Senator Howe.
Mr. Chair, well, I would think that would be the first red flag I would see in the way Minnesota does it, because you've got a 150% response rate. You know, that should be the first red flag, that you've sent out 16,000 surveys and you've got 24,000 responses. And I'm sure not all of them are – well, here's the other opportunity I see with this, is that you don't exclude projects that are already subject to the prevailing wage. So you're not getting empirical data. You're getting data that is bad data that's already corrupt. Because if the thing – I think most people – I certainly support the concept of prevailing wage. The problem, when you look at the formula, even the Department of Labor and Industry can't defend the way the data is collected. And so I guess the question is how do we fix it? We've got 40 years of bad data now. How do we fix the way we collect this data? And shouldn't we exclude projects that are already subject to the prevailing wage? I mean, that is going to cause a problem when you're trying to develop the concept or to set a prevailing wage. So can you explain that?
So, excuse me, Chairman. So, Mr. Committeeman, if I understand you correctly, what you're saying is that you think that we get biased results because we include the prevailing wage data, right? I mean, that's what I hear you saying?
I would say most people would be in agreement on that.
Okay. So let's just talk a little bit very quickly about how other states do it, because I think it's important to understand in the context, because the question is there a reason to change the way that we do it in Minnesota? And would we have a statistically different outcome if we used a different method? And I think one of the things I mentioned earlier is when the Taxpayers Association looked at the data, they tried to calculate if we use Davis-Bacon rates. And it comes out statistically the same cost to the state. So to me, that is another valifying characteristic because it's another way of looking if we calculated this. So I think the other question, if you want to take out, I mean, I think the argument is, maybe if I'm understanding, is that the prevailing wage rate is going to be to bias the whole sample. But the prevailing wage rate has been set in the past by the sample. Is that sort of the argument, if I understand correctly? So what I would say is that you may take out the prevailing wage projects, but I think you would come up with essentially the same results. In 51% of the counties, it's a collectively bargained rate. In 9 states in the country, that's what they use as a collectively bargained rate. If I was going to amend the bill, I would say you should go to the collectively bargained rate because it has the most information in it. And as an economist, I want to have the most information possible, and that's collectively bargained between employers who have to make their payrolls and make a profit and the unions. So, again, and you'll see in my study, there are recommendations that we make to make it a more efficient process. But I don't think – I don't understand how your argument – anyway, sorry.
And thank you.
I don't know if I answered your question.
Dr. Jordan and Senator Howe, I've got 6 more members and 14 minutes, so
– Wait, real quick.
One follow-up and maybe in the form of a comment might be – better?
Well, I definitely do think you need to exclude those. And it's interesting that we're using the argument that other states don't do it, but then we're the only state that does the mode. So then we defend that we should be separate in that case, but other states use the collection process. I think we do need to look at how we collect this data, and I think it is a big red flag when you're getting 150% response to your surveys. I don't know. I mean, we need to figure it out how we collect the data and make sure we're getting proper data. And I certainly support the prevailing wage. I just want to make sure that we're doing it accurately. You know, we can have a discussion whether it should be the mean or the mode and all these other things. But first we have to start with the right data. And I think the way we collect it needs to be given serious consideration. And it should be, it leads itself to manipulation on both sides. So I think we need to set some sort of a course of action, to correct it so everybody feels comfortable with it. I'm certainly not here to drive wages down. That's not what it should be. It should be reflective of what the current prevailing wage is. And so I'll leave that as my comment.
And Mr. Chairman, just to clarify, the plurality of the states actually do use the mode. They just use it in a variety of ways. So in some states like Minnesota, we use the mode and we say whatever the mode is for a county. In Wyoming, for example, they have a low threshold, I think it's 25 or 30%. And they say if 25 or 30% of the data is the same, then they use that. The federal rate says of 50%, but they use the mode. And so the mode is really the most commonly used method. The mean is only used by one state because of the heterogeneity of labor. It's a very problematic measure of what the real rate for the quality of labor we want is. And that's why the mode is the method in the majority of states, either that or the collectively bargained agreement.
I have Senator Daley next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had 2 questions, one follow-up to Senator DeKreif and one follow-up to Senator Howell. The first one, Minnesota jobs is really important to all of us, and we've worked really hard this session to focus on creating the environment, the conditions to increase the number of Minnesota jobs. With respect to the changes we're recommending in this bill, and it could be for any of you three, what, and pull out your crystal ball, this is a real tough question, what will the impact be on Minnesota jobs with this bill?
Senator Peterson, you want to take that one first? That sounds like we might have a few who want to respond to that. But
sure, Mr. Chair and members. I think that's the issue that's in dispute, and I would just encourage you. That's what you're going to have to decide for yourself when you make a vote. You know, as I started out earlier, I do believe myself personally. I've seen it in contracts that the city of St. Cloud has let to have bid. I have specific examples that I have seen relating to additional costs relating to this the way it's being figured now. And so I believe it will
get more people working and onto job site, I believe it will allow us to do more work. But I'm sure you recognize that's what's in dispute, and I think we'll all have to make that decision for ourselves.
Mr. Melander, another viewpoint?
Mr. Chairman,
pull it close, Mr. Melander. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, I believe that the legislative auditor's report indicated that there will be very insignificant savings to the state of Minnesota. And to the handout that we passed out earlier, budgets that are set by MnDOT on specific projects, this handout actually indicates that there was a savings using prevailing wages in 2010.
Mr. Chairman, one other point just to add to that is that, you know, we're talking about creating jobs, and if you take $900 million out of the hands of working Minnesotans who are going to spend that in the state, the impact is going to be $900 million on other non-construction workers in their communities. And so if you do this, it could actually cost jobs in Minnesota. That's the problem when you look at the multiplier. You take money out of hands of people in this room, and they can't afford to go to their local cafe, and the cafe shut down. So we're costing jobs here.
Senator Daley, you said you had two questions, so I think you have one more.
The impact of this legislation with respect to follow-up with Senator Howe's comments about the data, and you've got a journeyman, you've got an apprentice, you've got that seasoned veteran. If we do this, is there going to be an average for all of those, or are we able to have a median or a mean for each of those so that the impact is the kind of impact that we want to have when we change from the mode to the median? What are the consequences, whether intended or unintended, at this point? Have we walked through that with this?
Ms. Rattel, are you leaning in on that?
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Daley, the only thing that this changes is the calculation method. So whatever categories the survey has through DALI, those are not being changed at all. It's only how the calculation is used and how those numbers are used. So as far as differentiating, if that's already done through the survey, then it will continue to be done through the survey. None of that is being changed.
I need to respond to him.
Senator Tomsoni, you're next on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, my grandfather always told me that if you pay a little bit more for quality, it'll cost you a lot less in the long run. And what we're talking about here is quality. And intuitively, if you pay workers less, the project's going to cost less. I mean, we don't have to have surveys to figure that one out, I don't think. But the fact of the matter is how much less is the cost going to be, and how much more is the long-run cost, and what's the quality of the project? When you have an electrician who has a certificate, has 10 years of experience, knows his job, has been doing construction work under conditions of codes and knowing exactly what he's doing, you get the job done quickly, you get the job done right, and the job lasts for a long time to come. Somebody comes in from some state that we don't know who they are, where they come from, what they do. They not only take the money and run after they get done with the job and don't spend it here in Minnesota, what happens if the project falls apart? Who's responsible for it, and who's on the hook? We are talking about building schools, making sure the roofs stay up, making sure that the electrical work works, making sure that the plumbing works, making sure that our kids have a safe environment for where they're going to live. Is it worth paying a little bit more to make sure that the quality of the job is there for our kids and for the people who use these projects? I think what we're talking about here is saving money in a real long run. And in addition to that, if you cut workers' wages, not only do you reduce their buying power, as has been said in many of the testifiers here, you reduce the tax collections to the state of Minnesota. So it's a lose-lose when we do these kind of things. And so this bill doesn't do anything to help the quality of the work that goes into jobs in Minnesota. It doesn't do anything to promote our construction industry. It obviously is an attempt to reduce the amount of money that are being paid to people. And I think we have enough information, and we have enough surveys, and we have enough facts that state that the way the prevailing wage law works in Minnesota is very good, and it actually benefits the state of Minnesota and is not a negative thing.
I have Senator Miller and then Senator Cohen. Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is actually from the gentleman from Yagi Trucking, if he's still here, if you wouldn't mind answering the question. I didn't catch his name. Mr. Frank.
Thank you for joining us again. Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Frank, my question for you is we've heard a lot of talk about health and safety concerns, quality of work. Costs won't change, but the quality will. And you made an interesting comment earlier that that I'd like to ask you about and just confirm that that I was correct on this. You mentioned that you have a truck driver driving the same truck, that if he's on a prevailing wage job versus not a prevailing wage job, it's the same worker, the same truck, the same equipment, the costs are just more on the prevailing wage. So my question is, do you think that the quality of work or there's health and safety concerns, do you feel that your company couldn't provide highly skilled, qualified workers to do these jobs? My question is, do you think, what's your response to that?
Mr. Frank.
Mr. Chair and Senator Miller. I understand the question with regards to health and safety. The question about quality, this particular contractor that we work for, that we provide this specialized piece of equipment, calls on us to do either prevailing wage or non-prevailing wage jobs. And yes, we do use the same piece of equipment, the same driver. There isn't a quality issue in our estimation. Otherwise, they wouldn't be calling us for the non-prevailing wage jobs. So that's, we take great pride in our equipment. We take great pride in our workforce. We take safety seriously. It is something that is part of our culture in the company. So if you're asking us with respect to our company, I don't believe that quality is a difference.
Thank you. And I'm not sure if anyone else wants to answer that.
I'd just like to give you the data. So according to the studies that have been done, when prevailing wage laws were weakened, there was an increase of injury rates of 14% overall. Serious injury rates went up by 15%, and the number of days lost went up by 12%. That was in one study. In another study, it looked at the same question, what is the impact on health and safety issues? And he found that the presence of prevailing wage, when you look over states and the stronger prevailing wage laws have a greater impact, the prevailing wage reduces injury rates by 8.25%, while reducing the incidence of the most serious injuries by 10%. So about one-fifth of all the injuries that happen, deaths that happen in the United States are in the construction trades. So this is a very dangerous trade. And so when you're talking about a 10% reduction in the most serious injuries, you're talking about prevailing wage being very, very important to the lives of these workers.
I'm watching the clock.
Yep.
I have Senator Peterson as the author. I'll give you a...
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Mr. Chair and members, I would just encourage you, if you're interested in learning more about this, to read the Legislative Auditor's Report. And they do address this issue on page 84, where they say in bold print, really in the third paragraph, they have it bolded, that there has been little or no comprehensive research on the issue whether prevailing wage laws have resulted in better quality construction. And if you just type prevailing wage Minnesota in any search engine, this auditor's report will probably be the first thing on the page. So.
Senator Miller, briefly.
Quick follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Dr. Jordan. Would those statistics be for eliminating prevailing wage, or are those statistics to specifically what this bill is doing?
Dr. Jordan.
Thank you, Chairman. To address your question, the first study was looking at eliminating prevailing wage, so it was Utah data.
Okay.
The second study was looking at a reduction in the strength of the prevailing wage law.
Thank you.
Senator Cohen.
I'll pass.
Senator DeCraif.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mine is only a comment. Mine isn't a question, but it's directed to Mr. Melander. You made a comment when we were having some interaction about a piece of literature that you said that you're sorry I don't see the value in prevailing wage. What this basically does is this is basically a comparison to eliminating prevailing wage. I see some value in prevailing wage. That's not what the discussion is about. And I just want to go on the record as saying I never said that I don't see the value in prevailing wage. So I just want to make that clear.
And Mr. Chairman, committee members, I'm sorry that. Thank you.
Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question for the author, and, you know, I see Dr. Jordan trying to step in to help us with clarifying the evidence, and I want you to relax, Dr. Mm-hmm. Jordan. This is going to pass, regardless of the work that you do in scientific terms. Unfortunately, you can come in with many, many studies. This is going to pass anyway. And so the question for the author is really related to evidence, because I do believe in statistical evidence in policy. And what this study that Dr. Jordan brings before us is very much about the question of calculation, right? And that's what you're trying. So let's move away from the prevailing wage argument here, and that's how we calculate. And she's very clear in her study. She says how Minnesota determined the method of determining prevailing wage is appropriate. She's saying this in very statistical terms. She's not making a political argument about how we go about it. She's saying it works. And she ties that to preponderance of evidence. And in labor, the method that she uses obviously are tied to labor issues, right? So the labor issues that she puts in her report are related to productivity, to cost of projects, to apprenticeship training, injury, and et cetera, right? So you bring before us a proposal that says this method is just not good for Minnesota. I want to change that method. I think this is what she's trying desperately to say, you know, tell us why you want to change the method. So my question to you is that. So statistically speaking here, you say that we want to change the method because this method is just not good. As it relates to labor outcomes, okay? So please tell me from that perspective, why shall we do this? How does changing the method in the way you propose today actually changes what Dr. Jordan is trying to tell us?
Senator Peterson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Torres-Ray, I mean, I believe it's a compromise and it's more fair. You've heard today there's many people in this room that think this bill does not go far enough. And I've talked with those people, and there's many people in this room that want to see no change. And I've talked with those people. This bill is an effort to present something that's fair and reasonable to all the residents of Minnesota, based on what they pay for projects and the folks that do that work. I think it's a very genuine and solid stab at a very difficult issue that, you know, I don't want to ignore. A lot of people would like to leave it alone and not see a change, and many want to see a change drastically. In my view, this bill is a compromise. Because I think there's people that would like to see it go in other directions, and that's why I would ask members to support this. And really, if you want to see what other states are doing, there's a good comparison in that legislative auditor's report. Which again, if you want to learn more about this in the future, that's a great document to review. So I believe it's a fair.
I have a follow up.
Yes, Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Peterson, I do appreciate what you're trying to do. I appreciate your honesty in that regard, that you're trying to do something that you're being asked to do, you know, to bring kind of balance to whatever political pressures you're having. But I think what is important in policy terms, not just so much to bring balance to our political pressure, is really what we do here to create jobs and to maintain the level of quality in labor that we have. And so I just want to make sure that what is being said here is that the method that we have in Minnesota is actually okay, and that if we change that, there is a possibility. We don't have the statistical numbers that show that, There is a possibility that some contractors may be able to hire some people. But guess what? Some people are going to lose their jobs. So we're going to stay kind of where we are probably, or even worse. And we cannot show the numbers. And so a pilot project may be an interesting idea. That's not what you're proposing. And I think that's where we need to question really the direction of policy. But again, you know, this decision will not be made, I believe, on statistical evidence for the workers that are here. Are really very practical numbers, are reasonable numbers. This is a decision that is going to be made because of political reasons.
I have Senator Kielash, and he has promised me that he will acknowledge he's had two bites at the table already.
Oh,
thank you, Senator Kielash.
There's only one long one, Mr. Chair.
Now, a couple of things. One of the things that's kind of been misstated here, and that is saving money on jobs. Minnesota does not bid out jobs, they bid out projects. So if the project comes in cheaper, which has happened with the last bonding bills, and I would encourage leadership to get some more bonding bills out because that's what these guys in the need, number one. And number two is that this is a very complicated subject because what we've talked about is what can happen immediately. And some of the studies that we haven't had a chance to talk about is what happens 2 or 3 years from now. That for the trucker, as you go to the mean, somebody will underbid him. The mean keeps going lower. And finally, I would like to ask for a roll call vote. And finally, the purpose of prevailing wage was not to maintain or increase wages. It was a Republican strategy in the Davis-Bacon during the Depression when contractors from outside the area would come in and lowball those projects and then come in with cheaper workers. And they would do the projects and then take the taxpayers' money that they spent on the project back to their states so the local economy didn't benefit at all. And this does not necessarily help prevent that from happening. So, but, Mr. Chair, I would request a roll call vote on this. It's an important subject.
Thank you, Senator Kielash. So Senator Peterson moves that Senate File 1199 be recommended to pass and referred to the Finance Committee. Senator Kielash has asked for a roll call vote, so I will ask the clerk to take the roll.
Chair Michelle?
Yes.
Senator Cohen?
No.
Senator Daley?
No, I'm going to pass.
Senator DeCrae?
Yes.
Senator Howe?
Aye.
Senator Kielash?
No.
Senator Lilly?
Yes.
Senator Metzen? Senator Miller?
Yes.
Senator Nelson?
Yes.
Senator Peterson?
Yes.
Senator Tomasoni?
No.
And Senator Torres Ray?
No.
There being 7 yes and 4 no's, the motion is adopted. Members, thank you for the discussion. Thank you, both sides, for the respectful discussion. Committee is adjourned.
Thank you so much for staying.